Hello everyone, welcome back, or maybe I should say, I'm back. It's about 6:15 in the morning of January 3rd, 2016. Happy New Year! I hope things are well in your part of the world, or at least as well as they can be. We're continuing to have a very unusual winter. We didn't really have much snow at all until a short time before Christmas. And the weather remains unusually warm. I was out for a very long walk last night with a friend, and it was incredibly warm. The streets were wet. Late in the evening, and the rivers still haven't frozen over. So some of the usual winter activities have had to be curtailed. I mean, normally we would open up the surface of the river, clearing away a lot of the snow for about 15 miles, and that would become a skating path. That isn't happening. Normally there's a pop-up restaurant on the river, and they're debating what's going to be happening with that. It's funny, it's usually open for about a 3-week period. It's a number of the chefs here in Winnipeg get together to put this on, and they even invite visiting chefs to come and prepare meals on the river. And it's usually sold out weeks in advance. But this year, it's sold out. It's just that we don't have a surface of the river to put the restaurant on. However, on the land, on the riverbanks adjacent to the river, they've managed to create a number of skating paths. Quite a long course of skating paths, so they were filled last night with hundreds of people under lights, colored lights that have been strung in structures above the path. Actually, the whole thing was quite magical. We were walking along, and there would be points where it would feel like we were way out in the countryside with bits of forest off to either side of the path, and then a little while later we would encounter hundreds of people on this skating path and colored lights, and then a little further on it would switch to something else, and we were on a bridge going over the river, and it was something quite magical. I have 5 questions that have come in over the last while, 3 from last month or the month before this past month, where I didn't respond, and then a couple more that came in more recently. We'll get that down to that at some point. As always, I want to thank anyone who has sent in questions or comments of appreciation. I've had quite a few people write in expressing gratitude for what's on the website and describing how their sense of life has changed, and that things have become easier, seeing life more as an unexplainable happening and seeing the fact that it's not personal. I want to thank those who have sent in donations. I want to thank those who have ordered Buddhescence through the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to host these responses each month. For those of you who know Marcus and you might not know that he's a very talented jazz singer, although he hasn't really been working at that for the last 20 years or so, he's getting back into it, which is a very exciting proposition. And it'll be interesting to see how all of that unfolds. For anyone who's coming to this website for the first time and you're finding it difficult to relate to some of the responses I'm offering in this podcast, if you're interested, it might be worth looking at the two main talks on this website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox and you scroll down to the Talks heading, that will take you to the two main talks on the website. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. So they will offer the two, you know, they will offer basically the broadest and most detailed overview of what we're presenting here. As always, please keep in mind that what I do offer here is meant for your consideration. I'm not trying to convince you that this is the way that everyone should look at life. I'm merely pointing to our common experience of life and questioning as to what that common experience reveals. All of it is meant to be considered in relation to your own experience, because none of this can mean anything to you unless you see it in your own experience. Unless you see it in the experience you remember throughout your life thus far, and in the experience of this moment, the happening of this moment. So whatever I say has to be considered in relation to your experience, because it really doesn't matter what anybody else says to you. The only thing that's going to matter to you is your own particular sense of life, and that comes from your basic experience of life. It doesn't really matter what anybody else says about life. It doesn't really matter what anybody else tells you you should be, or what they might suggest as far as your living life. It doesn't really matter, because it all comes down to your own particular sense of life. What makes sense to you? So anything I'm offering here has to be related to your actual experience, considered in relation to your actual experience. And then you take from it whatever you take from it. So we'll get down to the questions that were sent in, but before we do, I want to make some general comments about this whole realm of non-duality. So, and in particular, the liberation or the freedom that might arise within this consideration of non-duality. So I get a lot of people sending in questions. I speak to a lot of people about this consideration of non-duality. And most often people are coming to this with an unrealistic sense of that freedom, an unrealistic sense of what's being offered, which is natural. I mean, it's a lot of these points are very subtle. So it's a very natural thing that people come to it with a lot of misconceptions. And the way this is presented in a lot of cases, I mean, there are a lot of people right now around the world presenting what might be called a non-dual sense of existence, a non-dual perspective, a non-dual approach to life. And often that's presented in a way that is easily misconstrued. Sometimes people make it sound as though you're going to be able to sweep away all of your existing thoughts, that you're never going to have a negative thought, In fact, I was speaking to somebody recently who said they had run into a person who claims to be spiritually enlightened, and this person is claiming that he never has a negative thought. He only has positive thoughts, which of course is a ridiculous thing for him to say, because he can't possibly even know that he's having a positive thought unless he's aware of a negative thought, because you wouldn't know what a positive thought is unless you had a negative thought to compare it to. So someone who is consistently acknowledging that he or she has a positive thought is somebody who's just totally obsessed with negative thoughts and converting them to what they would call positive thoughts. But there's never any freedom from the negative thought. It just becomes an endless grind of acknowledging positive thoughts and negative thoughts and attempting to convert those negative thoughts to positive thoughts. That's not the freedom that's presented with a non-dual sensibility. There may be some wonderful things to be discovered in that whole consideration of positive and negative thoughts, but it's got nothing to do with the liberation or freedom that's acknowledged within what we would call non-duality. It's also the case that often this non-dual stuff is presented with the notion that at some point you will be able to acknowledge yourself as the self-shining, ever-pure, radiant, effervescent awareness, pure consciousness, which again is not what non-duality is about. We would all like to be something special. We would all like to be self-shining. We would all like to be radiant. We would all like to be pure. We would all like to be identified as something in particular. Pure and radiant consciousness. Wow, that sounds so much more exciting than just the fact that I have to mop my floors this afternoon. It sounds so much more exciting than just being somebody living in Winnipeg, working in a warehouse, to be self-shining, pure and radiant, pure consciousness, pure awareness. But, of course, from a non-dual perspective, all of that terminology is ultimately bullshit. What's being pointed to in non-duality is not something describable. The place of rest. You know, we create these little nesting spots of thought, hoping to put together just this wonderful, cozy little nest of positive thoughts and special thoughts, and we want to find our place of rest in that little nesting spot of thought. But that's not what's being offered in non-duality. Non-duality doesn't offer you the possibility of ultimately identifying what's going on in this moment. And I know a lot of people feel that, oh God, that's a denial of thought, and oh God, this is like, we can't live without thought, and what's left if there isn't any thought? Often people have the impression that if we start questioning thought, there's nothing left, but actually you can stop thinking altogether right in this moment, and you won't end up at nothingness. And this consideration of thought isn't a matter of trying to get rid of thought. It's not a matter of trying to sweep away thought. It's not a matter of having only positive thought. It's simply a very direct questioning of what thought can offer and what it can't offer. So, again, from this, you know, people are hoping that if they realize the non-dual aspect of existence, that somehow they're never going to have an unhappy story. But that's not what this is offering. What we call the stories are still going to be there. It's just that we may not be very interested in them. And when we, you know, if we at some point realize that they are ultimately a fantasy, that even if some of the descriptions seem to be useful in a very practical way from day to day, we may realize that ultimately they are a fantasy, then when we are resting, our attention may not go totally on those descriptions, because there's plenty left. If you start to see that the happening of this moment can't be described, and that the fantasies, the descriptions of existence that we have, may be useful at times to do certain things like cooking a meal or telling a joke or building a bridge or whatever. They can be useful in those situations, but ultimately they do not describe what's actually going on here. And if we realize that, then maybe our resting place is not going to be the focus on thought, because there's much more to the happening of this moment than the realm of thinking, what we call thinking. There's the big happening that we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, you know, heart beating, pulsation, vibration, sounds coming and going. There's much more here than just the realm of thought. So maybe our resting place will no longer be a tight focus on the storylines. Even though those storylines are still presenting themselves, maybe there just won't be any interest in them when they're not needed. Or maybe there will be a certain amount of enjoyment of those thoughts, a curiosity about those thoughts, seeing them to be one of the mysterious expressions of existence, but realizing that they can never describe existence in any true fashion. And realizing that those descriptions, even though they may seem to be useful at times, they also carry a lot of unhappy aspects. So that after a while they may become much less attractive. And in moments where they're not needed, perhaps there will be a much more relaxed acknowledgement of the larger event of the moment, simply because thought is unable to really tell us what's going on here. Another misconception that often arises, I've often heard that people have the impression that if they just have this non-dual sense of existence, that somehow they're going to lead a protected life, that they somehow can't ever be harmed in a way. And ultimately that's true, because in the acknowledgement of the happening of this moment, we acknowledge that the big event is never really harmed, even though its appearances, the passing appearances, may seem to be harmed in a number of ways, that everything that those appearances are is simply the happening of the moment, and the happening of the moment is never harmed, it simply changes its appearance. So in one way it's true that there's no person there to ultimately be harmed, no matter what it seems they're going through. However, on a day-to-day basis, it can still feel very painful. The whole thing can still seem very painful. And if anyone thinks that an awakened being, a so-called awakened being, is somehow living a protected life, then you haven't paid attention to the stories of awakened beings. Because Christ was an awakened being. When he was being nailed to the cross, I don't think he was thinking, wow, I'm having a great time here. The Buddha was a so-called awakened being, but the fact that he had back pain, daily back pain, sometimes so strong that he couldn't finish a teaching, that he had to invite another monk to finish the teaching while he went and lay down because that was one of the only things that would alleviate his back pain, or in the process of his own dying, where he's dying of food poisoning and suffering vomiting and diarrhea for weeks, I don't think he was sitting there thinking, wow, the oneness is wonderful. So if you think that somehow having a non-dual sense of existence means you're going to escape all pain, or you're going to lead somehow some kind of protected existence, it's bullshit. The freedom or liberation that people speak of around this issue of non-duality has more to do with the seeing through certain false stories that arise. It doesn't mean necessarily that the false stories are going to disappear. It means that even when the false stories present themselves, there's a consideration that they are ultimately false. And so in that, the whole thing moves more to not knowing what's actually going on in this moment. And it moves more to the acknowledgement that everything we are, everything we apparently are, is simply a movement of, it was basically the happening of this moment, which is ultimately unexplainable. And that it's presenting itself, it's moving to its own unknowable nature. It's not the doing of a human being. That human beings are not causing anything to happen in this moment. So-called human beings are not causing anything to happen in this moment. And ultimately, we're not influencing anything that's occurring in this moment. There is simply the occurrence of what we would call this moment, and there's no possible way to describe it. So it's not a situation of human beings causing it or influencing it. And it's also not a case of sitting around thinking, oh, I don't have any freedom. It's all determination. It's all determined. It's not a situation where we go from thinking we have free will to thinking that everything in life is determined. It's a situation of acknowledging that whatever this is, isn't classifiable in terms of free will or determination, that these stories just don't apply to whatever this is. This whole situation could be called determinism if there was something called a human being that existed apart from the movement of nature, the laws of nature. Then it would be a matter that the laws of nature would be causing the human being to behave in a certain way. But that's not the situation. We don't exist as anything apart from the movement of nature. And what we call a movement of nature, there's no way of really saying what that is. So there is just the simple occurrence of this moment. The storylines don't apply, even though what we call the storylines still come and go. The descriptions of life as free will or determinism or human beings or, you know, any of the descriptions, none of those actually apply. It's a consideration of the limitation of those stories and seeing through certain false assumptions that we've made in those storylines. So that it's never about gaining new intellectual knowledge, and it's never about gaining new control over existence. In fact, it's really directly opposite to that. It's falling more and more into divine ignorance, so that there is, in some way, complete bewilderment about what's happening here, complete puzzlement as to what's actually happening here, and no concern, ultimately, about how it's going to express itself, because there is only the dance of this unexplainable occurrence, just this simple happening of the moment. It's just this, whatever this is, happening in whatever way it's happening. And so the freedom that's pointed to is not something that you gain, it's more something that's lost. What's lost are these agonizing stories about what is this all about? Is it freedom? Is it determinism? Is it personal? Is it impersonal? Is it a human being making his or her way through a cold alien world? A human being subject to the forces of existence, a poor human being, a poor isolated little human being, given moments of hope and moments of despair? Or is it pure, radiant, self-shining consciousness or awareness? Maybe at some point we begin to step away from all of these fantasies and come to acknowledge the simple happening of the moment, and come to acknowledge that this happening of this moment can be labeled as nirvana, or it can be labeled as samsara. So it can be labeled as freedom, or it can be labeled as suffering. Or perhaps there's a third option, the realization that there really isn't any way to label this in any legitimate way. There isn't any way to define ultimately what's happening here. And that the whole storyline about a poor little human being separate from the dance of this unexplainable occurrence, that whole storyline of a human being existing separate from the dance isn't true. There is only the dance, and to even call it a dance is too much. The words just point. And they point to a situation that can't be explained. It can't be defined. It's not being done by something called a human being. So the release, the freedom, is a movement into the simple happening of the moment. The unexplainable happening of the moment. It's not a situation of saying, I see it so clearly now, I'm never going to experience pain. I see it so clearly now, I'm never going to have an unhappy thought. I see it so clearly now, I'm never going to feel fear. It's not that. It's more the realization that no matter what is said about existence, it's never actually describing what's going on here in any true way. And it's more the situation that this is going to present itself in whatever way it presents itself. And fortunately, in its presentation, it's a mixed bag of apparent things. There are going to be moments of wonderful, joyful, blissful situations. And there are going to be moments of confusion, darkness, and despair. It's the realization that that is the natural expression of whatever this is. It's going to be the realization, excuse me, that no matter what anybody else says their experience is, you are not them. You can never be that exact expression. You will get your own unique mixed bag of apparent things. And even though ultimately there's no way of saying what is happening in this moment, there is still going to be what we call painful situations. There's still going to be what we call confusion. There's still going to be what we call despair. Even though ultimately there's no way of saying what it is. Even those labels, even those storylines become a mysterious, unexplainable happening, simply occurring in whatever way it occurs. So it's not a matter of getting a different situation. It's perhaps the realization that whatever situation you're in right now, it can be labeled as duality, it can be labeled as non-duality, it can be labeled as free will, it can be labeled as determinism, it can be labeled as nirvana, or it can be labeled as samsara. But then maybe there can be the realization that none of these labels are a true name for whatever this is. And none of what is described is a true description of what the happening of this moment actually is. So it doesn't give us a different situation. A consideration of these non-dual points may give rise to stepping away from this agonizing world of stories. And it's only agonizing when we believe the stories, when we think that those stories are ultimately going to lead us to one final, clear, true description of existence. And then I'll be happy if I get that one final, true description of existence. And if I get that one final true description of existence, I'll have the skill to manipulate life in such a way that it'll never be painful. That's the agony, the belief in that storyline, the belief that stories are going to give you this possibility. That's the agony, that's the misery. Maybe in considering these non-dual considerations, there may come the realization of how much agony is in that belief, how much agony is in those stories. And in stepping away from them, to whatever degree you might step away from them, to stop believing them. That's all I mean when I say stepping away from them. To just stop believing them to some degree yields a certain amount of rest. To stop believing in those storylines, that's accompanied with a certain amount of rest, because we're no longer caught up in that agonizing debate, that endless search for the final understanding, that endless search for a little more control so that I don't have to suffer, I don't have to have fear, I don't have to have confusion. Maybe at some point there's the realization that the search for that just adds a lot more discomfort to this whole situation. And the freedom from that is not about getting rid of thought. It's just that we start to see through the general assumptions that we've made about existence, the general assumptions that we've made about thought, the general assumptions we've made about a so-called human being that exists somewhere apart from the movement of nature, being pushed around by the movement of nature. Maybe we start seeing through the falseness of those assumptions. And it's just seeing through the falseness of those assumptions that brings some sense of what we would call freedom. It's freedom from this obsessive attachment to these fantasies. And then the fantasies can be used in a certain situation in a practical way without this added agony of believing them to be a true description of existence. And the being caught in the agony of the fact that they never resolve themselves. To think about life from one perspective, you have to be seeing it from the opposite perspective. If you describe one way of looking at life, if you describe thought as being positive, you have to always have in mind negative thought. There's no resolution there. You can't think of positive unless you're thinking of negative. You can't think positive thoughts unless you think negative thoughts. Because there's no way of knowing what a positive thought is unless you're constantly thinking of negative thoughts. So maybe at some point, this agonizing struggle within the world of thought, constantly being focused on the world of thought, constantly thinking that the world of thought, the world of opposites, is going to somehow resolve itself, maybe there will be the realization that that's ridiculous. It can never resolve itself. So maybe we lose interest in that ridiculous situation. Because there's a lot more happening in this moment than just thinking. And if we come to realize that all of the thoughts are false, that they carry a certain, like to believe them carries a certain amount of agony, then maybe we stop going to thought as our resting place. I mean, the average person right now, if they take time away from all of their usual activities and they sit down quietly in the moment, they automatically go to thought as their nesting place, their resting place, not realizing that thought isn't telling them anything true about what's happening here in this moment, and that the thought itself carries a certain amount of agony if we believe that it is telling us the truth. And to see at some point that it's not telling us the truth and that it carries a great deal of suffering in its endless debate, then maybe our resting place shifts. Maybe this obsessive focus on these storylines melts away to some degree, and the larger event of the moment becomes the resting place. And we come more to what's actually happening here. If there's the realization that all of the intellectual interpretations are false, then where do we find what actually is? Like right now in this moment, what actually is? It's not just a story. Anyway, that's enough of that. I just wanted to offer those general comments because if you're coming to this thinking that ultimately you're going to get rid of all of your thoughts and all of your negative thoughts and you're going to rebuild your intellectual life so that you think nothing but positive thoughts, you should maybe go somewhere else. and listen to some teaching that is offering that, because non-duality isn't offering that. And if you're coming to this thinking that you're going to get so clear about life that you're never going to suffer, that you're never going to feel pain, that you're never going to be confused, that you're never going to be frightened, then go somewhere else, because that's not being offered here. If, however, you might at this point feel it's slightly arrogant for a human being to really believe that they can ultimately understand what's happening in this moment, and that it's somewhat arrogant of a human being to think that they exist somewhere outside the movement of nature, and that they somehow control the movement of the universe in some way. If you might be suspecting that human beings are somewhat arrogant in making those assumptions, then there might be something here that you would want to consider. And these considerations are a consideration of your ordinary, everyday existence, just the happening of this moment, just the way it is. It's not asking you to go on a 3-month retreat and experience some moment of bliss. It's not asking you to cultivate constant awareness. It's not asking you to perfect yourself in some way, some idealized notion. It's asking us to simply consider what our common everyday experience is, what it has been for our lifetime thus far, and what it is in this moment. A very simple consideration of what our actual experience is and has been, and a consideration of what that reveals about life. So very, very straightforwardly, if I ask you what actually is in this moment, like if we look at our lives and we want to consider what life is, then it would have to be a consideration of the happening of this moment, because you don't have any other experience. You're not living in a past. You know, people say, oh, I live in the past most of the time. Well, you don't live in the past. You live in ideas about a past, because this moment doesn't feel like the past. What does this moment feel like? Does it feel like a past? Does it feel like a future? Or does it feel like what we call now, the happening of now? So let's wait a bit. Let's wait a moment here. So again, what does this feel like? Does it feel like the past? Does it feel like the future? Or does it feel like what we call the happening of now? Let's wait a bit. What does it feel like right here? This happening. It feels like something's happening. We all have the feeling that something's happening. Does it feel like a past? Does it feel like a future? Or does it feel like what we call the happening of now? So here's a very basic fact of our experience. No one ever experiences a past. No one ever experiences a future. It only ever feels like now. There are ideas about a past. There are ideas about a future. But nobody's ever actually lived in a past or lived in a future. All that ever expresses itself is the feeling of now. And the stories that we have about a past, it's what we call a memory of a now that looked different. Because the simple fact is, this happening of now, what we call this happening of now, It doesn't have a particular form. We all walk around at some point saying that everything in life changes. That's basically saying that everything in this happening of now changes. And in fact, we can switch the tense of that. It's to say that everything in now changes isn't quite right, because changes is the past in some way. Everything now is changing. So whatever this is, it's a living event, it's a process, an action, a movement, a happening that has no particular form. So there's the feeling of this presence, this immediate presence, the happening of now, and it has no particular form. It's formless, ultimately. Even though it appears to have form, we all have the impression that everything in life is changing. So even the house we're sitting in, we don't have the impression that when it was first built and brand new, that it's going to stay brand new for 500 years and then it's going to turn to powder. It's going to deteriorate, fall apart. The wood or the bricks are going to turn to powder and blow away. We don't have that impression that it's going to stay brand new for 500 years and then disappear overnight. We have the impression that it's growing old right now, that the paint is discoloring. It's drying out. Little bits of paint are flecking off the walls. If it's a brick building, the mortar is drying out between the bricks. The bricks will grow old, they will crack, they will fall apart. If it's not maintained, the building will fall apart. It's not that it's going to sit perfectly new for 500 years and then fall apart overnight. It's going to change slowly. We have the impression that it's changing in minute ways right now, even though we can't see it changing. That's our general impression of existence. And for those who have lived life apparently for a long number of years, we all eventually end up saying that everything in life changes. So very immediately we have this happening, this sense of presence. It feels like something's happening now, this present moment. And it has no particular form. And that's what all of these great spiritual traditions have been trying to point out to us for thousands of years. The ground of our existence, the actual essence of our existence right now, is a formless presence. And then added to that, Let me ask you, like right now, we all feel that something's happening in this moment, and a portion of that happening is what we would call our own process. Our body and our brain, the process of that living biological event. The process that you are. What are you doing right now to be the process that you are? Like your breath is coming and going, your heart is beating, your blood is flowing, the thoughts are coming and going, the moods are coming and going. What are you doing to make that happen? It's a very simple question. What are you doing to be the process you are right now? And the answer is very simple. Nothing. You're a living process. It's happening right now. It's just this happening of the moment. Happening. You're not sitting there thinking, oh, when should I take my next breath? Oh, should it be a long breath? Should it be a short breath? Should I breathe out forcefully? Should I breathe in forcefully? You don't have to do that. It simply happens on its own. You're not having to worry about making the next heartbeat. It's just happening on its own. You're not having to worry about your autoimmune system working, or you're not having to worry about Well, let me rephrase that. Most of us don't have to worry about our autoimmune system working. It just happens automatically. We're not having to be concerned about whether the blood goes through the proper channels in the body. It just happens automatically. We're not making the electrochemical firing of the brain cells occur, the electrochemical firing that gives rise to the next mood or gives rise to the next thought. It just happens automatically. Even if you have an urge in this moment to somehow moderate what your behavior in this moment, to explore the possibility of influencing something in this moment, the urge to do that isn't your creation. So all the people who are doing mindfulness meditation and they think they're in charge. I'm going to learn so much about life through my direct observation, and then I'm going to get rid of all of my negative thoughts and my painful feelings through constantly witnessing the moment. That I'm choosing to do this. And so I'm in control, I'm influencing my life. They ignore completely the fact that they're compelled to do that. Even the notion that that's something healthy to do isn't their creation. The urge to do this isn't their creation. Lots of people aren't doing mindfulness meditation, and it doesn't matter what you say about it. They aren't ever going to do mindfulness meditation because it doesn't make sense to them. They don't have the urge to do that. And the people who are obsessively doing mindfulness meditation, they aren't deciding to do it. They're obsessed with that idea. The urge to do that is so strong that they can't do anything else. So again, here you are. The happening that you are is happening right now. What are you doing to make that happen? And if we really consider that from our actual experience, we're not doing anything to make it happen. We don't give ourselves our particular needs. Because if we had the freedom to be anything at all, then we could just decide never to have a negative thought. We could just decide to have a career that would bring us lots of money. And we could just decide to have a different body and a different brain. We could decide to be funnier. We could decide to be less of a grouch. But we don't get that possibility. We may get the urge to explore what might be possible in those areas, but we don't get absolute control over life. All of these spiritual practices have been offered for at least 3,000 years. All of these spiritual practices that claim that they're going to allow us to perfect ourselves. And so look around you. Look at all the spiritual groups in the world. How many of them are filled with perfect saints? People who never get angry, never get confused, never get frightened. I mean, the practices have been there for 3,000 years. And look at your own life. If you've been doing some kind of spiritual practice for 30 years, how perfect are you? It's a very simple acknowledgement. If you had the urge to do a spiritual practice for 30 years, you didn't create that urge. There are lots of people who don't have that urge. And if you have that urge and no other urge is being offered to you by life, you can't switch that urge. You can't get another urge. What are we doing to be the process we are in this moment? Nothing. What is it? Ultimately, there's no way of saying. If we didn't know what it was when we were a baby, how would we know what it is now? If when we were a baby, we didn't have any storyline that we were a baby, and it, you know, our stories tell us that it takes years and years and years to learn all the labels that everybody else is using and to learn all the stories that everybody else is using. We didn't have those stories when we were a so-called baby. You know, for everyone looking at a baby, there's a baby in a world, but that's not happening for the baby. For the baby, there's the happening of this moment with no storyline, no interpretation, no possible way of knowing what this is. And if we look at our labels and storylines, basically all we do is use a label to point to some portion of this happening. And the descriptions simply describe how this happening apparently moves. But it's always pointing to a happening that we don't know what it is. There was no way, we didn't know what it was when it first presented itself. There's no possible way of knowing what it is now. Even all of this so-called labeling, there's no way to know what that is. Why is it a so-called human being does what he does or does what she does? Why is it that roosters go cock-a-doodle-doo and dogs go bow-wow-wow? There's no way of saying why. There's no way of ultimately saying what it is. When we were a baby, if we heard a rooster crowing, what we call a rooster crowing, we didn't think it was a rooster crowing. There was just a happening without any explanation. Then somebody tells us to call it a rooster crowing. I mean, the words only point to this happening. And the happening is a totally mysterious happening. It's a totally mysterious happening for everyone. So great, we can point all over the place to this happening, to what we call a wall, to what we call a floor, to what we call a car. We can point to this happening that is unexplainable. The words don't explain it. These are very simple acknowledgments. I mean, most people don't want to look at life in this very simple way. But this simple acknowledgment is pointing to certain basic facts that none of us are going to get around. And I call them facts simply because it's something that is common to everyone's experience. So it's our common experience. It's not just my experience. It's our common experience that it feels like the happening of this moment right now. It doesn't feel like a past. It doesn't feel like a future. It always feels like now. It's our common experience that everything in life is changing. Everything that we immediately come in contact with, if we apparently live our life for a long number of years, we will come to have the feeling that everything in life is changing. It's very obvious with our thoughts and our moods, they're changing. Our bodies are changing. Our relationships are changing. Our job situations are changing. The world economic situation is changing. The surface of the earth is shifting. Just the other day, they had an earthquake in Victoria here on the West Coast. At exactly the same time as they had an earthquake in California. So that's an indication of the really big shift that's going to be coming in a little while. So that's our common experience that, you know, and even if we go to, you know, even if we go to things that are beyond our immediate experience, like the movement of the universe itself. If we listen to the people who spend their days watching the movement of the universe, they talk about how everything is changing. If we go to the people who examine life in the most intimate and detailed way, the scientists, in their objective observation, they eventually come to tell us that everything is energy. It's just movement. There aren't even any things. So that in quantum physics, they make the statements that everything is simply process. If we go to the meditators who sit down and simply let life express itself, what do they come to realize? Breath coming and going, mood shifting, vibration, pulsation, warmth, coolness, tightness, looseness, heaviness, lightness, waves of energy, pulsation, vibration, sounds coming and going, thoughts coming and going, moods coming and going. Again, we come to this process of this moment, this action of this present happening. Who's doing it? Nobody. It's just happening. You can give up all effort in this moment. Give up all attempts to describe the moment. And the happening of the moment still happens. It doesn't need your conscious effort to happen. In fact, the happening of the moment will give rise to your apparent conscious effort. You don't need to make effort to have an urge to do something in life. Making effort is an urge in life that life simply presents. We don't create our needs, our interests, our concerns. We don't create our abilities or our lack of abilities, our basic abilities and our basic lack of abilities. And if we have an urge to refine a certain ability, we haven't created that urge. And we don't create the capacity to which we can refine that ability. So if we discover that a certain amount of positive thinking is maybe feels healthy or feels like it's an interesting thing to explore, great, the urge to explore it is there, but it's not our creation. And the ability to explore it is not our creation. And the capacity to which we can think positive thoughts isn't our creation. And we do not end up with absolute control. Even in that urge to explore a situation, to explore our capacity to live life in a certain way, simply because that's an interesting thing to do. We don't create the interest, we don't create the need for that, we don't create the urge for that, we don't create the capacity for that, and we never end up with ultimate control. Even the idea that we're going to think only positive thoughts is a totally ridiculous thing to say, because you can't even imagine what a positive thought is unless you can imagine what a negative thought is. The idea of positive thought can only exist in relation to the idea of a negative thought. So the belief that you're going to get rid of all negative thoughts and think only positive thoughts is ridiculous, because as long as you're focusing on positive thoughts, you're endlessly focusing on negative thoughts. So maybe in acknowledging some of these very simple considerations of our actual experience of life, the actual happening of this moment, when I ask you what actually is, like it feels like something's happening in this moment, when I ask you what it is, most of you will give me hundreds of labels and storylines that you've been taught to bark. But the labels aren't a true name for this. There was no true name for this. If you live in an English-speaking country, you get one set of labels. If you live in a French country, you get a different set of labels. If you live in Russia, you get a different set of labels. If you live in Ukraine, you get a different set of labels. If you live in Africa, in a certain country in Africa, you get a different set of labels. The labels aren't any true name for any of this. All the descriptions of form. You know, we identify something by describing its form, by describing its basic qualities. But the fact of the matter is, ultimately, all of that is changing and the form itself is going to fade away. So those descriptions of passing forms aren't a true description of what's going on here. What's going on here has no particular form. It's always changing form. What are you doing to be the process you are right now? It's very simple. Nothing. The process that you are simply occurs. Do you exist as something separate from the dance of this moment? Where would you be existing? There's just the happening of this moment. Like if you feel like you're existing somewhere else, where are you existing? We are the happening of this moment. Nobody has an experience of anything apart from the happening of this moment. We're never going to get around these basic facts. We don't create ourselves, so we're not creating anything else. We don't have a true story for what's going on here. It doesn't matter how many explanations we come up with. It doesn't matter how many labels we want to fixate on. It doesn't matter how many descriptions of form we want to give. They're not true, ultimately. They may be very useful in a certain moment. If we want to bake a cake, then it's great that we can read the cookbook. It's great that the cookbook describes certain forms. Flour, milk, eggs. And it describes what might be possible in creating a cake. But we don't create the urge to do that. Why do human beings make cakes? Nobody knows why. We can say it's because we're hungry. Well, then why are we hungry? We can say it's because our biological system has that drive. Well, why does our biological system have that drive? Well, it's because that's what human beings are. Well, why are human beings that way? There isn't any answer to these questions. Roosters go cock-a-doodle-doo, dogs go bow-wow-wow, but nobody has a clue as to why any of that is happening the way it happens. And nobody's making it happen. Human beings are what they are. They go this way and that. They do the apparent things that they do, but they don't create that. They're not the cause of that. We don't cause ourselves, so we don't cause anything else in existence to occur. We're part of the dance. And ultimately, the storylines about separate little objects relating to each other, that isn't true. Each and every apparent object is a movement. And as the physicists are now attempting to describe, all of life is a movement that nobody's creating, nobody's causing. We are a movement that nobody's creating and nobody's causing. It doesn't mean that if you realize this, you're going to sit around and never do anything. It means that you will make apparent decisions, but you're not choosing to make a decision. And the decision you make, you don't ultimately choose. You will have to make the decision that makes sense to you, but you don't create your basic sense of existence. You don't create the needs and interests and concerns that will motivate that decision. You don't create your ability to assess a certain situation. All of that is the expression of this totally unexplainable happening of the moment expressing itself. So, with all of that, let's get down to the questions that have been sent in. A first person wrote in to say, "Hello, Daryl. Thank you for answering my question in the last monthly talk. I have another one. Let's say if someone comes to you suffering from anxiety and the fear of living life. His body is tensed, his mind is tensed, etc. How would you point out that he's not a separate self doing anything? Or how would you point out a relief from his anxiety? I know that your message is not to help someone live a perfect life, but I had to ask you this question. Thanks in advance and take care." Even though ultimately the happening of this moment is not anything that can truly be defined, we will have apparent thoughts that come up to describe the situation of the moment, and the situation of the moment may be one that might be described as somebody who's afraid to live life, somebody who's filled with anxiety, somebody who's filled with all kinds of tensions. And there will be the natural urge to explore options in that situation. So again, we never have a situation that we're ultimately in control of life. We don't even have a situation where we're deciding whether or not we're going to be tense in a particular situation. Just very naturally, life presents itself in a certain way where there is an apparent world and an apparent person with the apparent response of anxiety and tension. And very naturally, within all of that, existence expresses a need or an interest in examining that situation to see if there's any option. And so if this is the situation that we're feeling incredibly fearful of existence, if we're feeling incredibly tense so that our body is tense, our mind is tense all the time, and it's creating what we feel to be or the whole thing feels to be an unhealthy situation, then very naturally there's an urge to explore that situation and to explore possibilities. So this person asks, how would I point out that he's not a separate self doing anything? Or how would I point out relief from anxiety? And I would be pointing it out in the way I've been pointing it out for the last, 20 years. However, not everyone is going to be able to relate to the notion that there isn't a separate self in charge of existence. So in this situation, if somebody comes to me and says, I'm filled with fear about living life, I'm filled with tension, with anxiety, then my response would not be basically, initially, to say, oh, just realize you're not a separate self and the world's going to present whatever it presents, existence is going to present whatever it presents, so relax. Ultimately, you're not in charge. And as the Tibetan Buddhists point out, if you have a problem and you can do something about it, don't worry about it. If you have a problem and you can't do anything about it, why worry about it? I'm not going to present somebody with that kind of response, because it's not, I can present it to some degree. If they respond to it or if they can relate to it, that's great. If they can't relate to it, that's just as great. However, if you have this situation of tension, of physical tension, of mental tension, and that feels overwhelming, and you have an interest in exploring possible options to that, then there's a whole realm of human expression that deals with relaxation techniques, the possibility of exploring relaxation. And there isn't any one approach to it that's going to work for everyone. So if you're concerned about your anxieties related to life, you might possibly explore options there. You might explore possibilities of relaxing that physical tension, of relaxing that mental tension. Now, you're never going to have a situation where you're going to be able to ultimately control each and every so-called situation in life. So life is always going to give rise to certain situations that provoke what we call fear or anxiety or confusion. So really all you can ultimately explore is what you would call your response to that situation. And even that you're not ultimately in control of, but life may be offering other possibilities. We're perfectly free to discover the possibilities that life is offering each and every one of us by simply exploring the situation. Who knows what the possibilities would be? If you're feeling incredibly tense physically, and you're feeling incredibly tense mentally, to the point that you feel it's hindering your ability to live life, then explore the possibilities. And what do you explore? Let's explore what people present as relaxation techniques. Really, the techniques, they don't offer you ultimate control. The whole notion of exploring a technique is to explore certain possibilities that life might be offering you, a certain range of expression that life might be presenting for you. And even the urge to explore that isn't your creation. The need to explore that isn't your creation. The concern to explore that isn't your creation. It's the movement of life. And you're perfectly free to move in that direction. As Schopenhauer would point out, you're perfectly free to move in the direction you will yourself to move. You know, if there are no physical obstacles to willing yourself to move in a certain direction, you're free to do that. But you're not free to create the needs, the interests, and the concerns that gave rise to the will to move in that direction. Ultimately, that's the movement of nature, the movement of existence, the movement of this indefinable functioning of this moment. So if someone came to me saying, look, I'm filled with tension, I'm filled with anxiety about living life, like, what can I do about it? Well, I don't know ultimately what you can do about it. I don't know what options life is going to offer you, but I can tell you that you're perfectly free to explore it. If there isn't some actual physical obstacle to your exploring it, and you have an interest in exploring possibilities, then you're perfectly free to explore those possibilities. And I will point out that your urge to explore those possibilities isn't ultimately your creation. So over the long run, I will still present the fact that you're not ultimately directing your life. You're not something existing separate from the movement of existence that's causing existence to move in a certain way. However, in the way that nature is expressing you, in the way that existence is giving rise to your apparent process, there may be all kinds of possibilities that you don't know about. And there may be an urge to explore those possibilities, all of which is the movement of the larger dance of existence. But if you have that urge to explore those possibilities, you're perfectly free to explore those possibilities. And there may be some wonderful surprises there. So I would urge, you know, if you have that interest, I would definitely support that urge to explore the possibilities of relaxation. I mean, there's something that most people don't talk about in these non-dual presentations, and that is that, you know, if we're going to live with these descriptions of existence, one of the necessary things in living existence is courage. Because you're not going to have ultimate control over existence, and you're not going to get rid of apparent difficult situations. So, to some degree, you're going to need a certain amount of courage to live life. It doesn't mean that you're going to. Courage doesn't mean never feeling frightened. Courage means feeling frightened, feeling confused, and living anyway, doing the best you can. It's one of the basic requisites for living life. Anyway, that's all that's coming up in response to that question, so let's move on to the next. Hi, Daryl. Thank you so much for your response in the November talk. I think I'm able to comprehend it. On the other hand, your general position that existence is not explainable will never be comprehensible, and it leaves me with a strong, helpless, nihilistic feeling. So that I can only answer to your wish that life, or to your hope that life is treating me well, my only answer to that is no, it isn't. Would you say something about that? Thanks in advance. All the best. It does seem to be the case that when I point out that there's no way to really explain what's happening in this moment. For a lot of people, that leaves them with a feeling of helplessness, or there may be some kind of what we would call a nihilistic feeling around that it feels bleak. The feeling that, oh, you know, it's not explainable, and so somehow life has this bleak quality that comes along with the acknowledgement that it's not explainable. However, there's something else going on in there. It's not just a matter of realizing that life is unexplainable, because a newborn child has no explanation for existing. A newborn child doesn't have a storyline for anything, and yet, if you look at a newborn child, they certainly don't look as though they're feeling bleak. They look as though they're feeling really interested about a lot of things in life. And when they're giggling away, they're laughing to themselves, laughing at things around them, it doesn't seem as though they're feeling bleak. So, let's look a little more closely at this situation of an adult who is realizing, oh, life is unexplainable, or considering the fact that life is ultimately unexplainable. So it's not really so much the fact that life is unexplainable that gives the feeling of bleakness. It's the feeling of losing something that you want. It's the feeling of losing a fantasy. You have the fantasy that you understand what existence is all about, and you have the feeling that that fantasy is helping you be healthy, is helping you be happy. The fantasy that you really truly understand existence, there's an ache in that. You want to truly understand existence because you're afraid of existence. And you think that if you can truly understand existence, if the You know, you have all kinds of storylines. Some of the storylines are really marvelous. You're hoping to be self-shining, pure and radiant, pure consciousness. And you're hoping that that's going to be the ultimate understanding of existence, and that if you can be that, you're never going to hurt. You're never going to feel frightened. You're never going to feel confused. And the problem is, no matter how much you believe that fantasy, that description, you're still going to feel hurt at times. You're still going to feel frightened. You're still going to feel confused. However, you have the weird belief that you're going to find an even truer explanation of existence. And then you'll get rid of the hurt. Then you'll get rid of the confusion. Then you'll get rid of the fear. And somebody comes along and says, sorry, there's no ultimate explanation for existence. It's just this happening. Then you feel like you're losing something. You feel that you're losing something important. And so it has this kind of bleak quality to it. But if you're really drawn to this consideration and you realize that the whole notion that you were going to ultimately explain existence was a fantasy, and that it was ultimately a very frustrating fantasy, because no matter how many thoughts you tried to get, no matter how many teachers you went to listen to another thought, no matter how many books you read to get another thought, to get a clearer thought, it still didn't get rid of all your fears and all your anxieties and all your concerns. All it did was leave you scrambling to find another thought, hoping, wishing, praying, oh God, please let me have some understanding of existence so I can get rid of the fear, I can get rid of the difficulty, I can get rid of the confusion. Ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, it's saying, look, you're never going to find a way to get rid of all of the fear and all of the confusion and all of the difficulty. Because what we call difficulty, confusion, fear, all of those aspects of existence are natural aspects of existence. And maybe at some point the wish that life could be something totally different will melt away, and we end up living with what life actually is. So fortunately, not all of life is difficulty, fear, and confusion. A good portion of it is joy and wonderment and pleasure. That's the complete package. So to be sitting there thinking that, oh God, there's no explanation for existence, and if I don't have an explanation for existence, I'm never going to be able to accomplish anything good or have anything good happen in my life, that's another storyline. That's where the bleakness is. The bleakness isn't in the actual event of the moment. The bleakness is in this notion of losing your wish, losing your hope of ever explaining existence. And the bleakness is in the added story that if you can't explain existence, somehow you're losing something important. I remember Da Frijon, kind of wild and crazy kind of spiritual master, he once gave a teaching about how there was a time when you had to be an adult in living life at a very early age. And he would point to how North America, the American West, was settled by very young people, young couples, moving into very harsh environments, very difficult situations in order to find a new life in the American West. And he would point out that, you know, some of these couples were like, the individuals were 15 years old. So he would say that there was a time when you had to be an adult by the time you were 15. And you had to shoulder the fact that life had difficulty, that there would be fearful moments, there would be very confusing moments, there would be moments of despair. But he would point out, he also pointed out, he says, now you can be an adolescent idiot well into your 60s. And by that he meant that by adolescent idiot, he meant you could be sitting around wishing for life to be different than what it is, well into your 60s. So again, he was pointing out that one of the basic aspects of life is you're going to need a certain amount of courage. That no matter how much you try to make life perfect, some idealized situation of never having confusion, never having pain, never having sorrow, you're not going to get that. So from his description, he was basically saying, grow up. from my presentation of it, I'm just saying, look, here's the fact. You're never going to be able to describe what existence actually is. We have no tool for that. You're never going to be able to make it pain-free or confusion-free. You know, even a deer, you know, an animal, this beautiful animal, a deer that isn't living in all of these intellectual considerations, when a deer moves from a patch of forest into a meadow to eat, the deer is anxious because the deer is aware that it is vulnerable in that situation, that its physical body is vulnerable. So the deer is very naturally anxious. The deer is very naturally on guard. That's the natural expression of existence. So no matter how clear we get about our situation right here, right now, that most fundamental survival mechanism that nature is presenting, just the basic survival of the body, is going to produce anxiety. There's no way around it, what we call anxiety. And it doesn't matter whether we can ultimately explain it or not. What we call anxiety will still arise as a natural expression within this situation. So even if you get very clear about the limitations of thought, even if you get very clear that you're not something separate from the movement of existence, the movement of existence itself still presents what we call moments of difficulty, moments of fear, moments of confusion. That's its natural expression. And the actual event of life, the mysterious, magical dance of the moment happening on its own, this mixed bag of things, one moment something we might call wonderful, the next moment something we might call terrible, that's not bleak. It doesn't inherently have a feeling of bleakness. All right, a third person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. It's been a while since I've asked you a question. Nothing was coming up since everything you say is so clear and fully agreeable. However, I would appreciate if you could say a bit more on love and the feeling of oneness or universal love. How does that fit in with the fact that everything is changing and part of the flow, as I like to call it, or the happening of the moment, as you say? Many thanks and much love." Love. Okay, what we call love comes in many different forms. You know, there are many different apparent forms that we call love. So there's loving your cat, there's loving your brother or your sister, there's loving your parents, there's loving your lover, there's loving art or business or science. So there are all these many things that we call love, and each one is somewhat unique, somewhat different from all the other expressions of love. So like everything else in existence, no two snowflakes are ever identical. No two human beings are ever identical. So no two expressions of existence are ever truly identical. And even though there are general patterns that we can call love, each and every situation of love, each and every apparent particular expression of love is somewhat unique. And those are that's a natural expression of existence. So you wouldn't even have the capacity to love if that wasn't the expression of nature, the expression of the universe. It couldn't exist if it wasn't an expression of the universe. In the same way that planets are an expression of the universe, the weather is an expression of the universe, love is an expression of the universe. It's not a human accomplishment. In that general pattern of love, there's something that we would call universal love. The highest philosophical notion of love is unconditional receiving, whereas you're simply open to all that life is offering. So it's an openness to receive everything that life is offering. And that is considered to be unconditional love. The highest philosophical notion of love is this unconditional openness. Just an openness of heart to everything that's being presented. And that's not something you can make happen. That unconditional openness may arise when you realize there's no option. That even if you try to hold off many of life's natural expressions, you're not ever going to be able to hold those off. When you realize the futility, the absolute helplessness in holding off the natural expression of life, maybe there will be a falling into unconditional love, which is simply an openness of heart to all that life is offering. There are lots of aspects of life that we find we don't really care for those expressions of life. We don't care for the moments of confusion. We don't care for the moments of loneliness. We don't care for the moments of difficulty. We don't want them to exist. And so we've closed our heart to a lot of those aspects of life. And maybe at some point we will realize in a very deep way that there's no way to hold off those aspects of life, because it doesn't matter how clear we get about existence, or it seems how clear we get about existence, life still presents itself as having some of these difficult aspects, things that we don't like. And no matter how much we don't like them, life is still going to express itself that way. So we may explore the possibilities of, you know, making our life a little more pleasant physically, and we may explore the possibilities of how we use thought. And we may, and you know, and what's practical and what's not practical, what's useful, what's not useful. We may explore the possibilities that life is presenting, and we may come to realize that our urge to explore that, our capacity to explore that, all of that is the movement of life. It's not somebody's personal accomplishment. We may become very clear in all of that, and life is still going to present difficult situations. It's still going to present the death of a loved one. It's still going to be presenting confusion in certain situations. It's still going to present as being, you know, moments where it doesn't seem so clear as to what direction we're going to go. Life will eventually present a direction, an apparent direction, but it may not be all that clear in any particular moment. So in the realization that all of that is the natural expression of existence, then maybe our hearts will open to the unwanted expressions, to the unpredictable expressions. And that would be a consideration of, you know, that would be what would be labeled as universal love, that unconditional acknowledgement of life's expression. We could say unconditional openness or receiving, but that gives the impression that there's somebody separate from existence who then develops the ability to open their heart to what life's offering. This is more the acknowledgement that there is only the dance of life. There's no option to that. Everything is the dance of life. Everything is only the mysterious happening of this moment, vibrant, dynamic, moving, shifting, one moment seeming to be terrible, another moment seeming to be wonderful. apparent thoughts coming and going, apparent moods coming and going, apparent people coming and going, all of that, the mysterious, vibrant dynamic of this moment, unexplainable, simply happening in whatever way it's happening. When we see ultimately there's no option to that, there is only that, then there's what we call universal love. There's just the openness, but it's not the openness of a person to the expression of life. It's just an openness in the dance, a vulnerability, a sensitivity in the dance to all that's being expressed, the fullness, the richness of this expression. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily pleasant, because the richness of life is the full apparent range, the moments of agony, the moments of joy, the full range of expression. Often people think that their freedom or their liberation is going to come from eliminating all of these so-called unhappy or negative aspects of life, the bad things in life. But your liberation is going to involve your capacity to experience the full range of life's expression, the capacity to experience what we call sorrow, realizing that that's a natural expression of whatever this is, the full capacity to feel the confusion and live anyway, to feel the fear and live anyway, to know that the fear may dissolve at a certain point, but it can come back at a certain point and then dissolve again. Life will express whatever it's going to express. Okay, another person has written in to say, "Dear Daryl, I have enjoyed all your books and the recorded media on your website. Thanks very much for all of that. Because you're so open to receiving and answering questions, I thought I would ask a couple. It seems to me that the main irritation in life is not so much just thoughts alone, but the self-referencing that happens in the midst of thoughts. True, some thoughts and associated feelings have more grab than others. Nonetheless, the sense of self that arises seems to be the fly in the ointment. If the me reference did not arise, there would be just thoughts and feelings with no owner. Do you happen to have anything to say about this, about the me that persistently arises? Is there a practice or inquiry you might suggest? How is it for you? And how is it you're up so early every morning? Do you not require much sleep? Thank you." Let's get rid of the why am I up so early, or how am I up so early every morning. I'm up very early every morning because I go to bed really early on the night before. So, yes, I need just as much sleep as everyone else, but I live at a different end of the day. So who knows why? I mean, I started life out on a farm, so we were up at 4 or 5 every morning, and that just is my natural rhythm, so that even on the nights that I do stay out late, which is rare, I wake up at 4:45 the next morning. However, on those mornings, I'll go back to sleep. I might get up for an hour or so, but I will eventually go back to sleep to get my sleep. And it's also the case that my sleep kind of varies. I might be up in the middle of the night, but I'll gain that sleep. I'll get that sleep at some other part of the day. And I nap at every noon hour. So at work, I just throw a piece of cardboard on the floor in a quiet corner of the warehouse and sleep for 20 minutes. And none of that is anything I've cultivated. It's just the natural rhythm of my life. I have no explanation for it. So All right, this question of self. There are a couple of aspects that immediately jump to mind here. We have the self that's described. So that self is very much part of the process of thinking and believing the thoughts, believing that what we describe is true. So describing ourselves as a body that's separate from all, you know, an object, a form that's separate from all other objects in existence, focusing on these notions of form and dividing the happening of the moment up intellectually into all these different forms, and then claiming that those forms are separate, instead of acknowledging that absolutely everything that's occurring in this moment is simply part of this big happening of this moment. Those storylines are one aspect of the self. And so that's very much tied in with the storyline. However, there's another aspect of the self where we actually start feeling like there were something invisible inside the head, looking out through the eyes. And so, you know, if we acknowledge the entire happening of this moment, and we ask ourselves, like, how far away is the big happening of this moment, the full happening of this moment? How far away is it from our consciousness? As we explore that, we might realize that the feeling of the big happening of this moment is what we call being conscious. So the big happening isn't any distance away from what we call consciousness, our consciousness. The big happening of the moment is what we call the feeling of being conscious. However, if the focus goes on one tiny portion of the big happening, like an apparent form that we would call a building, when the focus goes on that shape, that one portion of the happening of this moment, what also arises is the feeling that that shape is at a great distance from consciousness. So now look what's happened. We take the big happening of the moment, which is the basic feeling of being conscious or being aware, the feeling that something's happening right now, and then the focus goes on one particular small portion of this big happening, and now it feels like instead of the big happening, we've got two things. We've got something way over there with that seems far away from something here. It's the same happening. One moment ago, it felt like one big happening that didn't have this aspect of distance. It was just the basic feeling of awareness. But now in this different focus, it has the feeling that there's something way out there and something way back here and some space between them. And so we start building this notion that we are the thing way back here. And at some moment, at some point, takes about 7 years when people who observe child development, it in that process of a child maturing, it takes about 7 years to get to this point where you start believing you're an invisible thing in the head looking out at the world. So if we want to examine that very directly, Douglas Harding had a great little experiment. You take a paper bag with an opening that's big enough to fit over your face, and you cut the end out of the paper bag so that the paper bag creates a tunnel, and you're looking in one end of the tunnel and out the other end of the tunnel. If you don't have a paper bag, you can take a big piece of paper and create that kind of tunnel. So it's big enough to fit over your face. One end is big enough to fit over your face, and you look down that tunnel, that paper tunnel, and out the other end. Then very dramatically, we can look in the distance and focus on a particular object, then bring our attention back to the paper bag or the paper tunnel that you've created, and bring your attention back along the sides of that tunnel, back closer and closer to your face, and bring it back, bring the attention back as far as you can. bring it back to this end of this whole experience of seeing, and then see if you feel out if you actually have an experience of something that's doing the seeing. And you may realize in a very dramatic way that you have absolutely no experience of something at this end that's doing the seeing. There's just the seeing. And it starts at where you feel your eyes are, and then it moves out from there. But you don't have the experience, any experience of something at this end, something invisible in the head, looking out and doing the seeing. So that's one way of exploring this. Another way you can explore this is sit quietly with your eyes closed and begin to acknowledge the feeling of pressure where your body is touching the chair. We call it the body touching the chair, but really it's something we call pressure. But that word is pointing to something that's not a word. So we come to this actual feeling of pressure. And just gently consider that. Notice that. Acknowledge that. And so it's this feeling of something happening. And then you can maybe explore, do you have the impression that there's something there that's separate from this feeling that something's happening? Or is it just the feeling that something's happening? Do you have an experience of a separate awareness that's having this feeling that something's happening, this happening that we call pressure? Or is it that the feeling itself that something is happening is the awareness? And in that kind of exploration, you may come to realize that it's the actual happening of the moment that we call awareness. The feeling that something's happening right now is what we call awareness. Awareness isn't something that exists apart from the happening and is having the feeling of awareness. Awareness is the feeling that something is happening. So there's just this happening. Now, as this person put it, if the me reference did not arise, there would just be thoughts and feelings with no owner. And that's not quite the fact. The fact is that if the me did not arise, the whole notion of me is part of the world of thought. So, you know, and this feeling that there's a me that's somehow separate from the whole event of the moment is an extension of that description, these descriptions of thought, so that if that me referencing disappears and the attachment to our descriptions disappears, then what remains is not thoughts and feelings occurring without an owner. What remains is just this unexplainable happening of the moment. So, and even that is saying too much. So it would be more, what actually is, to question what actually is in this moment is to question what is there when there is no false interpretation. And since every interpretation is in some way false, it's what is there when there is no thinking. So if we ask that question right now, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, just rest. For a moment, there isn't what we call any thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. There definitely isn't the feeling of something that's existing apart from the vibrant happening of this moment. So think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, rest. And for a moment, there isn't what we call thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness, and it's not something that's a word, and it doesn't feel as though it's something divided. Think the question a number of times, what is there when there is no thinking? And rest at the end of the question. What remains? Be that. Now, this isn't to get rid of thought. It's to come to something more basic than thought, to realize that all the descriptions can fall away and there's something even more basic, something that can never be described. That something is not a thought. So these words I'm using right now are pointing to that, but the words are not truly describing what that is. And it is out of that that the next apparent description arises, all on its own, miraculously. The next storyline arises. But even that storyline, there's no way of saying ultimately what that is. So these are some of the ways to explore this, to consider this. I don't know what you're going to get from this. For each person, you know, this kind of exploration is unique. And there isn't any one particular outcome you're going to get. Like, even for all the people who agree that there's no way of saying ultimately what this is, and there isn't any so-called human being making any of it happen, each and every person who has that general sense of life has a unique situation somehow, a slightly different way of saying it, a slightly different way of expressing it. All right, and a final person wrote in to say, "Hi, Daryl, wishing you a good and healthy new year in 2016. I'm hoping that life has not been treating you badly because of your cancellation of the December talk. I guess because I canceled that last podcast, this person is feeling that I might be going through some hard times. So I'm not going through any hard times. It was just things were getting pretty busy and I was pretty exhausted actually. So I just skipped that last regular podcast." He goes on to say, "It seems for me that the questions are running out gradually. I think that everything there is to say about a non-dual perspective is already said in your books and talks, and I resonate with that. On the other hand, the mind and thinking doesn't stop presenting bad feelings, regret, non-acceptance of oneself, or it presents a personal story, or it calls everything destiny, and so on. You would certainly say that this is what life offers, and no other direction is possible. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening, right? Would you have anything more to say about this situation? And if you did, it would be welcome. Best wishes." I don't think I have much more to offer other than what I've already stated in this particular podcast. Again, to have this non-dual sense of existence, this non-dual perspective on existence, it doesn't mean you're going to get rid of all of your unhappy stories. It may mean that there's less of an attachment to those stories when you realize that they're not true. So in this moment, we have what we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Now, if we don't call this big happening of the moment anything at all, there's just the happening. And it's not a thought. Even what we call the arising and passing of thoughts is not really the arising and passing of thoughts. We don't know what that is. So we could say it's a physical happening, a movement, and there's no way of ultimately saying what that is. However, that movement that we call thought, the movement that we call description, it has all kinds of storylines, what we call storylines about existence. And if we're believing that the storyline is telling us the truth, then we believe that the storyline is an important aspect of the expression of life, then even when we rest, we're always focused on the storyline because we think the storyline is telling us the truth. And we believe it's important. We believe that the storyline is somehow figuring life out and that it's helping us be in charge of life. If we start to look at that storyline and we start to question how true it is and we start to discover that it's not true and that it can't possibly be true, so that the storylines present are a fantasy, even though they might be useful in certain situations, they are ultimately a fantasy. They're not telling us what's actually going on here. If there's a deep realization that the storylines are always false, and there's a deep realization that even though they're somewhat useful at times, they also have this whole agonizing story about poor little me stuck in a cold alien world, poor little me born, poor little me that's going to die, poor little me that's suffering, poor little me that doesn't have control. If we realize that these fantasies have a certain agony to them, then maybe we'll lose interest in them because they don't tell us what's actually going on here. If we want to know what's actually going on here, we have to acknowledge what is when there is no interpretation, no intellectual interpretation. If we're not thinking life into something other than what it is, what actually is? So again, we think the question, what is there when there's no thinking? And at the end of the question, we come to something more basic than thought. Because thought can disappear, and it doesn't leave nothingness. Now, there's no way of saying what it is that remains, but it becomes obvious. Because when you think the question, what is there when there's no thinking? At the end of the question, for a moment there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like nothingness. It feels like there's something vibrant and lively. And then the next thought comes up automatically because it's part of this liveliness. And ultimately there's no way of saying what that is either, what we call thought. There's no way of ultimately saying what that is. It's just part of this liveliness, whatever this happening of this moment is, this lively process, this unexplainable functioning, this vibrant dynamic. Now, that doesn't mean that the apparent storylines will fade away. The apparent storylines will still present themselves. There will still be the story of a me journeying through life, but it's not true. And the whole storyline becomes a puzzling event. The storyline is happening. It's not the one and only thing that's happening right now. It's presenting itself. There's no way of ultimately saying what it is, and all of it is occurring automatically. It's moving and shifting and dancing in whatever way it moves and shifts and dances. So, when we acknowledge that there is this, when we step away from the storylines long enough to acknowledge the larger happening of the moment, the vibrant dynamic, just this happening that nobody is doing. And that includes the process that we are. We're a happening that nobody is doing. We're a happening that can't be described in any ultimate way. It's just happening. When we come to that, when there is that acknowledgement, then we come to what all the world's great spiritual teachings have been pointing out. There is only the unformed ocean of this moment. There is only the river of this moment. There is only the great spirit, the happening of this moment. It has no particular form. It's moving and shifting and dancing on its own. We don't exist as anything apart from that. It has no conceivable beginning. It has no conceivable ending. It has no conceivable form, no legitimate form. One moment it feels great, another moment it feels terrible. One moment it feels separate, another moment it feels like there's great oneness. Another moment it feels this way, another moment it feels that. It has no particular form. And it presents its own nature. It presents whatever it presents. There's no way of saying ultimately what's happening here. It's just a simple acknowledgement of what our actual experience is. It's not something that you learn in a moment of bliss. It might be an indication, that moment of bliss might be an indication that there's something more going on here than your world of thought can deal with. A moment, a feeling of oneness might be an indication that there's something more going on here than the storyline of poor little me being separate from the world. But the realization of this, the acknowledgement of this in a grounded way, in a full way, has nothing to do with pleasant experiences. It has nothing to do with pleasant or unpleasant thoughts. It has to do with the acknowledgement that it feels like something's happening in this moment. Even if we make no effort at all, there is this feeling that something's happening in this moment. And what are we doing to make any of it happen? Nothing. It just happens. And that includes the apparent process that we are. It simply happens the way it happens. And so it's an acknowledgement of a mysterious, in a way you could say a mysterious and magical dance that presents an apparent bag of mixed things. Wonderful moments, moments of agony, moments of clarity, moments of confusion, moments of joy, moments of sorrow, moments of ease and moments of anxiety. All of it moving and shifting and dancing automatically. The richness of this entire sense of presence, the magic of this entire sense of presence that has no particular form. Maybe you're drawn to it or maybe you're not. It has nothing to do with gaining more intellectual knowledge about life. It has nothing to do with gaining some kind of control. And for some people, it feels like an incredible freedom, and for other people, it feels like something to be frightened of. None of us gets to decide how this unfolds. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this response. It went a little longer than usual. I hope that the next month brings you only good things. I know, however, it's going to bring you a mixed bag of things. Either you relate to what I'm presenting here or you don't relate to what I'm presenting here. All of it is meant to be considered in relation to your actual experience of life, what you experience, what you have experienced through your life thus far, and what you experience in this moment. It's just for your consideration. What arises from that, who knows? So until next time, I wish you well. Bye.